How many fights have you had today?
None.
They're getting frightened of you. What's that thing around your neck?
I showed him. It was a crude iron hammer. A miniature hammer the size of a man's thumb. And the sight of it made him laugh and cuffed me around the head.
We'll make a Dane of you yet, he said, plainly pleased. The hammer was the sign of Thor, who was a Danish god almost as important as Odin, as they called Woden, and sometimes I wondered if Thor was the more important god. But no one seemed to know or even care very much. There were no priests among the Danes, which I liked, because priests were forever telling us not to do things, or trying to teach us to read, or demanding that we pray, and life without them was much more pleasant. The Danes, indeed, seemed very casual about their gods, yet almost everyone wore Thor's hammer. I had torn mine from the neck of a boy who had fought me, and I have it to this day. The stern of Ubba's ship, which curved and reared as high as the prow, was decorated with a carved eagle's head, while at her masthead was a wind vane in the shape of a dragon. The shields were hung on her flanks, though I later learned they were only displayed there for decoration, and that once the ship was underway, the shields were stored inboard. Just underneath the shields were the oar holes, each rimmed with leather, 15 holes on each side. The holes could be stopped with wooden plugs when the ship was under sail, so that the craft could lean with the wind and not be swamped. I helped scrub the whole boat clean, but before we scrubbed her, she was sunk in the river, just to drown the rats and discourage the fleas, and then we boys scraped every inch of wood and hammered wax-soaked wool into every seam, and at last the ship was ready. And that was the day my uncle Elfric arrived in Jofurik. The first I knew of Elfric's coming was when Ragnar brought me my own helmet, the one with the gilt bronze circlet, and a tunic edged with red embroidery and a pair of shoes. It felt strange to walk in shoes again.
"Tidy your hair, boy," he said.
Then remembered he had the helmet that he'd pushed onto my tousled head.
"Don't tidy your hair," he said, grinning.
"Where are we going?" I asked him.
"To hear a lot of words, boy. To waste our time. You look like a Frankish whore in that robe."
"That bad?"
"That's good, lad. They have great whores in Francia. Plump and pretty and cheap. Come on."
He led me from the river. The city was busy, the shops full, the streets crowded with pack mules. A herd of small, dark-fleeced sheep was being driven to slaughter, and they were the only obstruction that did not part to make way for Ragnar, whose reputation ensured respect. But that reputation was not grim, for I saw how the Danes grinned when he greeted them. He might be called Jarl Ragnar, Earl Ragnar, but he was hugely popular. A jester and fighter who blew through fear as though it were a cobweb. He took me to the palace, which was only a large house, part built by the Romans in stone, and part made more recently in wood and thatch. It was in the Roman part, in a vast room with stone pillars and lime-washed walls, that my uncle waited, and with him was Father Beorka, and a dozen warriors, all of whom I knew, and all of whom had stayed to defend Bebbanburg while my father rode to war. Beorka's crossed eyes widened when he saw me. I must have looked very different, for I was long-haired, sun-darkened, skinny, taller and wilder. Then there was the hammer amulet about my neck, which he saw, for he pointed to his own crucifix, then at my hammer and looked very disapproving. Elfric and his men scowled at me as though I had let them down, but no one spoke, partly because Ivar's own guards, all of them tall men, and all of them in mail and helmets and armed with long-shafted war axes, stood across the head of the room, where a simple chair, which now counted as Northumbria's throne, stood on a wooden platform.